When Hyde sits down to write the history, he's doing, I suppose, two main things. One is to provide some sort of analysis of why the Royalists got defeated, why they lost. Much of that he explains by the way in which they didn't have a clear idea of what they were doing, of strategy. The way in which Royalist policy was made was incoherent. A lot of the blame for that is laid very subtly and without saying so very directly at the door of his king, Charles I. The other thing that he's doing is to provide a sort of memorial. There's a sense that this is a Royalist war memorial. There are powerful descriptions of the people who have been lost fighting. Of course, the famous one, his friend Falkland, but many other major figures on the Royalist side, even one or two on the other side as well, who have fallen in the course of the many violent confrontations that there have been. Hyde wrote very fluently, and he wrote for a long time, and he tried to get as much information as he possibly could. Charles I supported what he was doing. He had correspondence with the king reporting back what he was trying to do, and the king sent him further information, encouraged others to send him further information to fill in the bits that Hyde didn't know about. But increasingly he became rather frustrated because others wouldn't respond, others didn't support the project. They thought there were better things for them to do than to write this enormous analysis of the causes of their failure. And probably many of them felt that it was rather close to the knuckle, and probably many more felt that they didn't support him personally either. So he did become frustrated with it. By 1648, the king had been a captive of the parliamentarians for almost 2 years. Parliament had been fully in control of the country for a bit less than that. Increasingly, there was discontent at the way in which Parliament was running the country. There were conflicts between the various factions within Parliament, which were becoming very, very strong indeed, between Presbyterians and Independents, between Parliament and the army, which the Royalists thought that they could exploit, and chances of doing that effectively emerged in 1648. Hyde is called back to become part of the team advising Prince Charles and the Queen, who are the effective heads of the Royalist cause, in 1648. And of course, being that sort of person, he jumps at the chance, and through many and circuitous routes, he arrives at the Royal Court in The Hague later that year, including, as it happens, missing several boats and being captured by pirates and losing most of what he had at the time. But he gets there, unfortunately just too late to participate in what's called the Second Civil War in 1648, a major uprising against Parliament, which ends with the remaining Royalist rebels besieged in Colchester and eventually capitulating in Colchester, and the defeat of a Scottish army there. Thereafter, Hyde's one of the chief advisers to Prince Charles, and as he then becomes, after Charles I's execution in 1649, Charles II. Hyde comes back to England with Charles II at the Restoration of 1660. Indeed, in many ways, he's seen as the architect of the Restoration, though it comes as much of a surprise, I think, to him as it does to everybody else. For 7 years after the Restoration, Hyde, or Clarendon, as we must now call him, because he becomes Earl of Clarendon in 1661. Clarendon is Charles II's chief minister, Lord Chancellor, formally appointed, but really with his hands in just about every bit of government business there is. It's suggested to him that he becomes the equivalent of what the great French ministers, Mazarin and Richelieu, are, chief minister or even prime minister, as we call it today. But he wants to remain as Lord Chancellor. Unfortunately for him, his position becomes rather more tenuous as we go into the Restoration. There are rivals, of course, and there is the great disaster of the war against the Dutch of 1665 to 67, which, despite early great victories, the English lose pretty comprehensively in 1667. Clarendon has been an opponent of the war, but that doesn't wash much because he has become such an unpopular figure by 1667 that he's seen as very much a convenient scapegoat. He's impeached by Parliament. Charles II isn't disposed to save him in a set of actions which many people saw at the time, and certainly since, as a huge piece of ingratitude